Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1958 with a release date of Friday, March 27th, 2015 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Thailand's new master frequency list takes 6 meters back from ham radio. UK regulator Ofcom uses ham radio input in ultra-wideband device rulemaking decision. International Telecommunications Union Symposium endorses small satellite regulation. A successful transmission of 2 new ham radio shows from Germany, and our annual April 1st roving reporter is back with the latest on the FCC enforcement cutbacks, as only he can imagine them. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report 1958, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
Ham radio access to 6 meters in Thailand has become a thorny issue, as we hear from Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
Thailand's National Broadcasting and Telecommunications Commission, or NBTC, is considering a new national frequency master plan, one with the twin objectives of strengthening national security while also planning new broadband telecommunication services for the future. Thailand's National Telecommunications Committee recently approved the plan and presented it to the NBTC, which has the responsibility for revising it every other year. The new master plan sees reallocation of 50 to 54 megahertz to the Army to enforce national security. But a conflict soon cropped up from a decision last year to allocate 50 to 54 megahertz to Thai amateur radio operators. The Army, which has been using the spectrum for emergencies, oppose the move. Because of this, the NBTC has yet to allow amateur radio operators the use of the 6-meter band, given the protests from the military. Now, if the National Broadcasting and Telecommunications Commission goes forward with the new master frequency plan as proposed, it would appear as if Thailand's army will be getting its way and hams will not gain access to the 6-meter band. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles.
The new Thai master plan also proposes to reallocate 470 to 510 megahertz for both telecommunications and broadcasting services instead of only the former as it is at this time. The entire story can be found on the web at tinyurl.com/Thailand-6-meters. Following the response to the United Kingdom telecommunications regulator Ofcom Ultra Wideband, or UWB, consultation by Essex radio amateur John Gulliver, G6JPG, several changes have been made. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, explains.
As the consultation notes, UWB devices use very large bandwidth, so they're able to transmit high data rates over short distances, but transmit at very low powers so as not to interfere with other devices. The new regulation, including Gulliver's suggestions, implement the European Commission decision on these devices so as to harmonise the technical parameters for equipment across all member states. The new ultra-wideband regulations came into force on the 25th of March. In its UWB statement, Ofcom thanked G6JPG for the issues he had highlighted. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci, 4NJH, reporting from Nottingham, in the UK.
For those not aware, the term consultation, as used by Ofcom in the UK, is the equivalent of a notice of proposed rulemaking from the FCC here in the United States. International Amateur Radio Union representatives were in Prague in the Czech Republic March 2nd to the 4th to join discussions at an ITU symposium on the regulatory aspects of orbits and spectrum usage for nanosatellites and picosatellites. More than 160 participants from some 40 countries attended the conference. Delegates discussed challenges facing small satellite development, including aspects related to national and international legal and regulatory issues, frequency management, and radio communication standardization. Participants reiterated the need to ensure the long-term sustainability of small satellites in space. They stressed the importance of implementing national regulatory frameworks that clearly define the rights and obligations of all stakeholders. This in conformance with international laws, regulations, and procedures established by the United Nations General Assembly, the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, and the International Telecommunications Union. According to ITU Secretary General Hulin Zhao, the symposium provided a unique opportunity for experts to examine the procedures for notifying space networks and consider possible modifications to enable the deployment and operation of small satellites. Amateur radio interests were represented by International Amateur Radio Union Vice President Ole Garpested, LA2RR, and former IARU Region 1 President Hans Blondiel Timmerman, PB2T. The International Amateur Radio Union's Administrative Council has approved the publication of an IARU Emergency Telecommunications Guide and has made it available on the organization's website. This handbook was developed to provide the IARU member societies with materials suitable for training their members to participate in emergency events. It is also designed to provide guidance to the individual amateur radio operator who has little or no experience in handling emergency communications, but desires to enhance his or her ability to participate in such events, or to simply have a better understanding of the process. The publication can also be used in conjunction with other training materials by leaders within the emergency communication community to train radio operators in the basic theory and practice of handling emergency communications traffic. You can find it in cyberspace at iaru.org/emergency-telecommunications-guide.html. The Amateur Radio Emergency Data Network and its associated RDEN project software is being described as a new method of providing the ham radio community with a quality solution for supporting the needs of high-speed data in the amateur radio emergency communications field. It comes in part from the developers of Broadband HamNet, which was formerly known as HSMM Mesh. These hams have expanded their unique approach to create environmentally robust, commercially available, ubiquity hardware. This, in turn, has changed the complexion of mesh implementations from an experimental, hobby-oriented novelty into a viable alternative network suitable for restoring some level of inter- and intranet connectivity for those instances when all else fails. RDEN project developers say this meets that objective. A wireless mesh network, or WMN, is a communications network made up of radio nodes organized in a mesh topology as a form of wireless ad hoc network. Wireless mesh networks often consist of mesh clients, mesh routers, and gateways. The mesh clients are often laptops, cell phones, and other wireless devices, while the mesh routers forward traffic to and from the gateways, which may, but need not, connect to the internet. Now, the RDEN team is inviting those interested to download and adopt the RDEN Release 3.0.2 and give them the opportunity to support your emergency communications mesh implementation if your group has one. You can find out more about the Amateur Radio Emergency Data Network and download the software at www.aredn.org. In a related story, Broadband HamNet has released version 3.1.0 firmware for the Linksys WRT54G and Ubiquiti families of products. This firmware returns to the use of patch updates, while also supporting add-on tools such as HamChat, created by Nikolai Ozarov, VE3NKL, and a tunneling solution optimized by Daryl Quinn, K5DLQ. This firmware release continues support for MCOM data networking in the 2.4 GHz, 5 GHz, and 900 MHz bands using Ubiquiti equipment, and in the 2.4 GHz band using Linksys equipment. Many hams were concerned about future broadband HamNet support of the Linksys units. The core team has listened to these concerns and has decided to continue support of Linksys devices. For more information, please take a look at www.broadband-hamnet.org. In DX Upfront, word that the members from the DX Interceptors Amateur Radio Club, operating as MS0IXD, will be on a de-expedition to the Isle of Man between May 8th to the 11th. Operating from Scarlet Point, the team plans to use CW, SSB, and RTTY on 80 through 10 meters, including the WARC bands. Their aim is to provide as much as possible an all-time new one or new band and mode to as many individuals as they can. If you make contact, QSL electronically via Logbook of the World or direct to M0OXO only. The exact dates of April 14th to the 20th are now official for the DX0P operation from Pagasa Island from the Spratly Islands Group. Activity is planned for 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, RTTY, and JT65. QSL via WA6LOS. Latest updates are on their Facebook page at facebook.com/DX0P2015. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio News Line, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W4BS repeater serving Memphis, Tennessee. It appears as if broadband providers will be taking the Federal Communications Commission to court to try to stop the regulatory agency's tough new net neutrality regulations. According to news reports, the trade group U.S. Telecom filed a petition Monday, March 23rd, in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. The group wants the court to review the FCC's rules, which it claims to be arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion, as well as a violation of existing law. The regulations, passed by a 3-2 vote last month, are designed to ensure the uninhibited flow of Internet content. They prohibit broadband providers from blocking, slowing, or selling faster delivery of legal content flowing through their networks to consumers. Broadband firms oppose the FCC's decision to classify high-speed Internet as a telecommunications service under Title II of the Communications Act, and thereby subjecting it to utility-style regulation. The petition is being looked at as the first step in an expected lengthy court fight over the FCC's new online traffic rules. It's expected that other legal challenges may be filed as well. Ham radio volunteers are needed for this year's Run of the Charles canoe and kayak race that includes a 26-mile on-foot marathon taking place near Boston, Massachusetts, Sunday, April 26th. The full course runs from Riverdale Park in Dedham down to Artisani Park in Brighton, and amateur radio operators are needed to provide communications for this aspect of the event. Volunteers must have a dual-band 2-meter and 70-centimeter handheld radio and an antenna with improved gain over the stock rubber duck. These are necessary because many volunteer sites are low-lying areas where it can be a challenge to reach repeaters. Assignment check-in times vary by location, from 7:30 a.m. at far start points to 11 a.m. near the finish. All are local Eastern Daylight Time. Those wishing to volunteer or have questions should contact Brett Smith by email to ab1rl@arrl.net. The Venture amateur radio product lines have been sold to Vibroplex, LLC of Knoxville, Tennessee. This includes the Venture BY series of iambic paddles, the ST series of single-lever paddles, the Venture Hex paddle, the N2DAN mercury paddle, and the Venture RJ series hand keys. Also included in the sale are the HKEY-1 universal hookup kit and the YA-1 low-pass filter. Vibroplex says that it will continue to offer the Venture products through existing marketing channels. It has also agreed to honor the manufacturer's warranties of all covered products and to offer parts and support for those products as well. Vibroplex may be contacted at www.vibroplex.com. Passing a CW test is no longer required to get an amateur radio license, but there's still a mystique about Morse code, and many hams are interested in acquiring this skill and getting on the air. That being the case, Dan Romanchik, KB6NU, has announced the publication of his new book titled The CW Geek's Guide to Having Fun with Morse Code. KB6NU is the author of the No-Nonsense License Study Guides and one of amateur radio's leading bloggers at KB6NU.com. His new CW Geek's Guide to Having Fun with Morse Code is all about helping hams learn Morse, assisting in finding a key that's right for them, and showing them how to get on the air. It also teaches hams how to use abbreviations, cue signals, and prosigns properly. The CW Geek's Guide to Having Fun with Morse Code is available in several different formats. These include a PDF, Nook, or Kindle ebook versions directly from KB6NU.com. The paperback copies can be purchased through Amazon.com. The ebook versions cost $2.99, while the paperback is priced at $7.99. A book titled On Air, A History of BBC Transmission is now available for free download from the BBC Engineering website. On Air celebrates a lifetime of achievement in the world of broadcast transmission engineering and includes many anecdotes from the lives of people involved. The idea for On Air came about back in 1997 when BBC Transmission was privatized. Prior to that happening, BBC Transmission delivered programs to listeners and viewers for 75 years using a vast network of engineering systems. On Air, A History of BBC Transmission is both the human and technical story of how these shows reached the BBC audience. It was also the end of an era and a natural point for reflection on past achievements. As such, it resulted in a book of some 80,000 words, edited by Norman Shacklady and Martin Ellen, that is available in PDF format at tinyurl.com/the-bbc-book. AMSAT is looking for volunteers to assist in the operation of its booth at the 2015 Dayton Hamvention, May 15th to the 17th, at the Hera Arena in Dayton, Ohio. According to AMSAT's Hamvention chairman, Steve Belter, N9IP, whether you are available for only a couple of hours or if you can spend the entire weekend with us, your help would be greatly appreciated. Those wishing to volunteer should send an email to n9ip@amsat.org if you can help. By the way, last year, 52 people volunteered to assist with the AMSAT booth. Belter says that it was the efforts of those radio amateurs that made the 2014 Dayton Hamvention a success for AMSAT. The Central States VHF Society has announced that its annual conference for 2015 will be held in Denver, Colorado, between July 23rd and the 26th. This year's sponsor is Rocky Mountain Ham Radio, with the venue being the Denver Marriott Westminster in Denver, Colorado. At this time, planners are soliciting papers, presentations, and poster displays for conference presentation. Currently, their deadline for receiving papers prior to getting them to the ARRL for publication is April 22nd. Questions concerning papers, presentations, and poster displays can be directed to Program Chairman John Maxwell, W0VG, by email to w0vg@arrl.net. Conference registration, as well as a link to the conference venue for bookings, is now available at http://2015.csvhfs.org. The 5th Annual April Fool's Fest, sponsored by the WHERE Amateur Radio Club, will take place from 8 a.m. to noon Central Daylight Time on Saturday, April 4th. The venue is the former Richland High School gym in Noble, Illinois, with this year's grand prize being a Kenwood TM-V71A dual band mobile. There will also be hourly drawings for dual band handhelds, plus the traditional pulled pork barbecue. Talk-in will be on 146.760 MHz Noble 2-meter repeater that requires a 94.8 sub-audible tone for access. For a PDF formatted flyer with the directions to the gathering, go to tinyurl.com/april-fools-hamfest. And for those traveling to the Southern Hemisphere, the South African Radio League's National Convention will be held Friday, April 17th to Sunday the 19th. This year's event is being hosted by the Bloemfontein Amateur Radio Club in the city of the same name. Full details, including a reservation form, are available on the SARL website at www.sarl.org.za. A follow-up to our story 2 weeks ago about Channel 292, the ham radio-owned shortwave station operating from Germany. With more on the story, here is Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN.
March 22nd and 23rd saw the successful launch of two new amateur radio-related shows from Europe on the 49-meter shortwave broadcast band. The first broadcast of DARC radio was transmitted at 1000 UTC on the 22nd from a 100-kilowatt transmitter in Austria. It was then repeated on the 23rd at 1600 UTC from the amateur-owned 10-kilowatt AM transmitter of channel 292 on 6070 kilohertz from Germany. The English Amateur Radio News, or EARN program, preceded DARC radio at 1500 UTC. As we go to air, Ed Durant, DD5LP, reports that the two programs were received across Europe. All responses were positive on both signal strength and content. They even had a long-distance listener in Malaysia who tuned in via a software-defined radio receiver located in Holland. DD5LP adds that current plans are to move English Amateur Radio News to follow the repeat of the DARC radio show on Mondays, as propagation may be better at that time for those further away. He also reminds listeners that with Europe soon to be moving to its version of daylight saving time, that transmission schedules will be changing. Ed says to keep an eye on channel 292.de for the latest updates. For Newsline, I'm Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN, in Topeka, Kansas.
This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Some new technology holds the promise of two-way radio in the literal sense. Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has that story.
A team of Columbia engineering researchers has invented a technology that's called full-duplex radio-integrated circuits. These are ICs that can be implemented in nanoscale CMOS to enable simultaneous transmission and reception at the same frequency in a wireless radio. Up to now, this has been thought to be impossible. It's always been assumed that transmitters and receivers either work at different times or at the same time but at different frequencies. The Columbia team, led by Electrical Engineering Associate Professor Harish Krishnaswamy, is the first to demonstrate an integrated circuit that can accomplish this technology. The researchers presented their work at the International Solid State Circuits Conference in San Francisco on February 25th. More is available at tinyurl.com/2-way-chip. For Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
Researchers are reporting that purposefully introducing flaws into graphene used in fuel cells can improve them and make them more efficient. Separating protons from hydrogen efficiently is a major challenge for fuel cell technology. Now, Northwestern University scientists, collaborating with researchers from five other institutions, have discovered that graphene that is slightly imperfect can shuffle protons from one side of a graphene membrane to the other in just seconds. Franz J. Geiger is a Northwestern chemistry professor involved in the research. He says that everyone always strives to make really pristine graphene. But this new data shows that if you want to get protons through, you need less perfect graphene. He notes that the selectivity and speed of the imperfect version are much improved over conventional membranes, giving engineers a possible new and simpler model of fuel cell design. The research was reported in the journal Nature Communications. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/imperfect-graphene. The Southampton University Space Flight Society has posted a well-illustrated report on its solar eclipse balloon flight that took place on March 20th. The balloon carried two payloads called Olaf and Majora. Olaf transmitted images throughout the flight on 434.149 MHz using a slow-scan digital video mode. Unfortunately, there was a fault with Majora, which stopped transmitting data on 431.211 MHz about 80 minutes into the flight. The payloads are thought to have come down in the sea just north of Cherbourg, Normandy, off the French coastline. The Southampton team hopes they will wash up on a beach or a boat spots them and sends them back. This will allow them to determine what went wrong with Majora and get the unprocessed images that were digitally recorded to internal micro SD cards. ESERO UK, the United Kingdom's Space Education Office, has announced the winners of the UK round of the International CANSAT competition. Winner of the beginners category was the Cannoneers from Tonbridge School in Kent. Team Impulse from St. Paul's School in London won the advanced category. Team Impulse was also announced as the overall winner of the competition and will go on to compete at the European CANSAT competition in Portugal. A CANSAT is a student-built simulated satellite with all the major subsystems, including radio communications on the 433 to 434 MHz band and power supply fitting into a 350 milliliter soda can. ESERO UK organizes the annual UK CANSAT competition for teams of secondary school students. More is online at tinyurl.com/CANSAT-winners. On the air, news that the Irish Radio Transmitter Society has been issued the call sign EI90IARU, this to commemorate the 90th anniversary of the founding of the International Amateur Radio Union. The call sign is available for use by any amateur in Ireland's 26 counties holding a current amateur station license. Those wishing to do so are asked to first notify Dave O'Connor, EI6AL, of the times, bands, and modes prior to going on the air so as to avoid any potential duplication. Anyone applying to use the call sign is considered to be undertaking it to use it in accordance with Ireland's telecommunications rules relating to amateur radio operations. PR70FEB is the third of 12 Brazilian special event stations to celebrate 70 years since the end of World War II. According to Roni Reis, PS7AB, each month in 2015 will see the activation of a different call sign, each with its own commemorative QSL card. If you make contact with PR70FEB, QSL Direct, or via the Bureau, electronic QSLs can use Logbook of the World, EQSL, or direct email. PS7AB also notes that a special certificate will be sent in 2016 via email to stations who contact with at least 10 special event stations using any mode or modes, including SSB, CW, or digital. In DX, the second team of the 7QAA Malawi D-Expedition will be operational through April 1st. This team is operating four stations on 160 through 6 meters using SSB, RTTY, CW, and PSK. Daily logbook of the world and club log uploads will be provided. Logs are available for online viewing at secure.clublog.org/expeditions/7QAA. F5MNW plans to be active stroke FR from Reunion Island until April 14th. His operation will be on the high frequency bands using only CW. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. Lastly, WA1ZAM will once again be operational as PJ7PL from St. Martin between March 28th and April 5th. Activity will be holiday style, using SSB and RTTY and possibly CW, QSL to WA1ZAM. And finally, as we reported last week, the FCC is planning to cut its Enforcement Bureau staff in half and close three-quarters of its field offices, replacing them with so-called Tiger Team Strike Forces. But Newsline's April 1st roving correspondent, Pierre Pullenmeleg, reports that that is only the tip of the iceberg.
We have learned from our confused sources that the FCC's proposed enforcement Tiger Teams will be only part of a menagerie of planned strike forces, including lion, leopard, cheetah, and chimpanzee teams. Each of these will be devoted to enforcing FCC rules in a particular radio service, representing in total a titanic new response to lawlessness upon the airwaves. Beginning next April 1st, enforcement in the amateur service will be the responsibility of the FCC chimpanzee team strike force. These special agents will leap into action whenever a rules violation is detected on the handband, going bananas and swinging from tower to tower until the violator is brought to justice. The ultimate goal, according to newly named team chief Sam Simeon, is to make it coconut clear to the amateur radio community that the FCC means business, and that hams who monkey around with the rules will eventually slip up and be brought down. From the Primate Pavilion at the Bronx Zoo, this is Pierre Pullenmeleg reporting for Newsline. Hey, give me back my banana!
As always, Pierre provides us with the stories that have great appeal. Can't wait to hear his follow-up about 365 days from now. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that Amateur Radio Newsline is seeking nominations for its 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award. For consideration, a nominee must have used amateur radio in some way that has benefited his or her community or encouraged technological development directly or indirectly related to communications. Nominees must be 19 years or younger and reside in the United States, including Hawaii, Alaska, Puerto Rico, or any of the Canadian provinces. The individual must also hold a currently valid United States or Canadian amateur radio license. This award is not a contest. The person selected as Young Ham of the Year is judged on his or her overall accomplishments and contributions. Any prizes awarded are secondary in nature. The deadline for submitting an application is May 30, 2015, and the decision of the judging committee is final. To obtain an application, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award in care of Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. You can also download a form in Microsoft Word format at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY, clicking on the word here and saving the file to print at a later time. Presentation of the 2015 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will take place the weekend of August 15th and 16th at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. For now, with producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles, plus our news team worldwide, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH in Topeka, saying 7-3, and as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015, all rights reserved.